Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined today by our super producer in between his daddy duties, Jason Ruggiero. Jason, how are you today?
I'm good. It's good to be here, as always.
So opening day is almost upon us, as the Cardinals are going to be taking on the Cubs Sunday night on ESPN, and the rest of the league opens up on Monday. So we got some real baseball that'll be happening this week.
Each day this week was the last day of the week, like the last Tuesday or the last Wednesday, you know, like till October when there wouldn't be real baseball.
Yeah, and every ESPN baseball talking head wants you to know that too. Oh, it's the last Monday without a game until October. Like,
gotta have something to talk about, man.
Yeah, you gotta fill that time. So before
nothing else is happening.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Before we get started today with the Pirates and Indians, I want to bring up a topic that is very near and dear to my heart, Jason.
Okay.
So, new commissioner Rob Manfred stated in an interview with the Wall Street Journal the other day that he hoped that this season in-market streaming would be something that would be available to baseball fans everywhere.
Thank God.
How amazing is that? I don't even have like a segue into talking about my feelings for this because it's that strong. I just think this is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
It is the greatest thing you've ever heard. It would literally be the greatest thing.
Yeah. Well, and here's kind of my take on it. I think in the last couple years, in all aspects of your life, you've seen how rapidly technology has evolved.
Yes.
You know,
should we explain in market streaming? Because if somebody doesn't know what we're talking about, they might know it, but they don't recognize it by its name.
Right. So in market streaming, for everybody that chooses to buy their baseball on MLB TV, instead of, you know, having a cable subscription where you're right. watching your, you know, your teams that are available on whatever's in your market. So, you know, for fans in this area, your in-market teams are Pittsburgh and Cleveland. So typically those will be the teams you'll see on your cable packages. So if you buy MLB TV, all the teams are available to you except for your in-market teams. So for me living in the Erie area, I can watch every game on MLB TV unless it's a Pirates or an Indians game.
When it's on.
Right, yeah. Now, you can go back and you can watch the archived games. You know, you can watch the game after it's over. And they're pretty good about... The games are up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, they're available pretty quickly after they're over. But still, you can't watch them live.
Right.
So, Rob Manfred... And this has been a big... I mean, this has been a big problem in baseball. Not just recently, but forever. I mean, you can go look at... If you Google, you know, MLB TV market maps...
Yeah, you should, because you'll see how ridiculous the markets are.
There's people in Iowa that are blacked out of, like, five different teams.
Yeah, know? Because it's not like there's no part of the United States that isn't in a market. Like, you could be, like, 1,000 miles from a team.
Right.
It's like, well, no, you're in the Mariners market up there in Montana. Yeah.
I mean, if you live in Hawaii, you're blacked out from all of the West Coast teams, the only teams that you might ever have a chance to see. You know what I mean?
Right.
So this is a pretty big step for Rob Manfred. And he seems like the kind of guy who is, you know, just based on his couple months that he's, you know, been behind that desk, seems like the kind of guy who's going to be a forward thinker with baseball.
He's certainly not scared to bring anything up.
Right. Yeah. You know, like he brought up the and I think kind of it was blown out of proportion, but, you know, the banning the shifts whole topic, which I don't think he actually meant that in that context. But, you know, yeah, he's bringing up things to talk about. And this is a huge one. And I think what he's really realized, and don't get me wrong, I don't think that Rob Manfred is like the Robin Hood of Major League Baseball saying, oh, all of our fans are being oppressed. Please let me help them. I think it's more like he realizes people are going to figure out a way to watch this product regardless of whether we're on board with it or not.
And so why don't we get on board?
Yeah, we'd better get on board so, you know, we're ahead of this instead of falling further and further behind it. Because I can tell you, I watch in-market games every night, and I don't have cable TV.
Yeah, And I think that's part of it. And I think along with that is the realization of cable, you know, is like a bloated whale that's slowly rising to the surface. And he's got to look ahead, which you said, it seems like he does always try to look ahead. And when he looks out there, I think he sees like, wait a minute. So if cable goes away, that's going to hurt one of our big cash cows. How can we prevent that? Well, we can prevent it from by allowing people in market to watch their games. You know, like why put this extra party in the cable distributor? Like, you know, create, you know, Root Sports Pittsburgh or Sports Time Ohio, then the team sell that channel to that distributor, and then, you know, like we can just bring those games right into someone's living room.
Yeah.
Like the teams own the networks, we own the delivery system. If we let people watch their in-market games, how many more people would subscribe to MLB.tv?
Right. Now, here's the thing that I'm curious to see, because I know, you know, like I said, baseball's a, you know, billions of dollars of business is coming through Major League Baseball's front door every year. But, you know, like the Dodgers in 2013, the Dodgers signed like a $7 or $8 billion deal for the next 20 years of, you know, Los Angeles baseball. I think it was Time Warner Cable, you know, signed that deal with the Dodgers. What happens with companies that have done that? That's what I'm curious to see. There has to be some fallout for that, because if you're Time Warner Cable, you can't be thrilled with the prospect of people in Los Angeles being able to just directly stream their product from Major League Baseball.
I think that's correct. I think though, like there was a big blow struck like a couple months ago when Dish TV announced their Sling TV package, which was a $20 a month streaming cable package that included ESPN.
Right.
Because, and the reason why that was such a big deal, we're getting kind of off subject here, but it does directly relate to baseball. ESPN, which of course is part of ABC and Disney and this kind of massive empire of channels and broadcast apparatus, Disney was not releasing ESPN to any of the streaming packages. Like if anybody listening has streaming like a Roku or anything like that, you know, like there's an ESPN channel, but you have to put in your cable password, and you know, basically it wasn't a real channel.
Right.
And ESPN was doing that because they felt like, or I should say Disney was doing it because they felt like that was the last thing like holding cable together was live sports. And it's basically like, we're not giving up ESPN content for free, because it's like one of the few reasons people buy cable anymore. But then they did let it go on a $20 a month package with like 10 channels. And so that's my point. I think like there's chinks in the armor, and I'm sure Time Warner's not going to be happy about it, but they also have to face the reality of there's going to come a point where no one's going to buy their overpriced cable package to watch DIY Network, because everything else is going to be available in other ways where you can buy only what you want.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be like, well, we could spend, you know, this on Netflix and this on this and this on this and this on HBO Go and whatever, and spend $40 a month, or we can buy this cable package for $90 a month, and we get all that plus this DIY Network.
Right. Well, and I think all of this stemmed from, there was a lawsuit in New York that played out the last couple weeks. But, you know, it was basically brought on by some fans who said, like, hey, we're being blacked out from all these teams. And, You know, like last year there was a judge that already ruled that baseball's antitrust exemption works for some things, but it's not going to work for television broadcasting, because that's, you know, she said basically it's a subject that's not, you know, central to the business of baseball. So right. I think Manfred is smart to be making this move preemptively and make himself again look kind of like that. I am the compassionate commissioner of baseball, but really, I think what it comes down to is it's just a savvy business move.
Yeah. And I think it's always dangerous when you charge people hundreds of dollars for a product and then don't let them use the full product because of where they live. So.
Right. Yeah. So this is good news for people who, like, it's definitely, it would be a lot more convenient for me to be able to just cast baseball from my phone instead of having to plug, you know, several things in to get it onto my TV.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm excited for this. I'm curious to see this all play out, and I think it's going to end up playing out pretty quickly in front of everyone. So, good news for all the tech savvy fans.
Yeah, it was pretty quick when they decided to not black out the nationally televised games. You remember that? Like that just like happened overnight.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
It wasn't a big deal, and it just kind of like, oh, now these are available. Here you go. Have fun. But. So, anyways, enough about television.
Yeah, that was a lot of discussion, but I think it's important discussion about the future of baseball and television. So now let's move on to some real baseball stuff. We're going to be talking about the Pirates today. Of course, we'll be talking about the Indians, and then we will wrap up with a quick Seawolves shout-out at the end of the episode as well. So, okay. Jason, let's start off with the Pittsburgh Pirates. We're going to start by talking about some of the bumps and bruises, dings and dents. The other day, if you were watching the Pirates take on the Orioles, you probably had a mild, if not severe, heart attack when Andrew McCutchen apparently slipped on home plate coming out of the box and just stopped running and left the game. So, you know, I happened to be watching the game, and I didn't get too worked up because even though it was an Orioles broadcast, the Orioles announcers never brought anything up. They didn't talk about what happened or, you know, why he left. And Andrew McCutchen is an integral enough player in Major League Baseball that I feel like if it were something severe, the Orioles broadcasters would have found out what had happened.
Yeah.
So McCutchen came out the next day and said basically that it was no big deal, and he only left as a precautionary measure. So it was very alarming, but I you know, it's spring, so I try not to get too worked up about overreactions. My sense was, after reading everything that he said, he probably would have stayed in the game if it were a real game. But, you know, since it's spring training, whatever.
Let's just fake game.
Yeah, let's just leave and play it safe. So,
well, I need Andrew McCutchen to be healthy for my fantasy team, so this is all good news.
Yes, very good news for your fantasy team.
Which everyone cares about.
You're right, yeah. That's probably my favorite thing that I like hearing on podcasts is when people talk about their own fantasy teams.
Yeah.
Continuing with the dings and dents, most of the other ones fairly minor. Luis Heredia has been playing catch. Boy, he just, the more and more I read about Luis Heredia, the more and more of a mess this kid seems to be. But they're trying to get him in better shape.
That's good.
And right now he's projected to start the season in extended spring training. So if you're not familiar with the pecking order of baseball, when you start the season in extended spring training because you're not in good shape, that's about as low on the totem pole as you can go, I feel.
That's a bad sign, yeah.
You know, Heredia just has not progressed the way that you would hope that, like, signing a 16-year-old kid would progress. So, you know, I wasn't super high on him as a prospect last year. I was ready to kind of bump him outside my top 10 prospects and lump him in with, like, you know, some riskier prospects at the end of the top 20. But continuing on with, you know, some other injuries that might warrant some more attention. Clay Holmes, who underwent Tommy John surgery last year. Is a couple months away from making his regular season debut. He'll be more than likely starting the season with the High Bradenton Marauders. So he should be getting to start some sim games and live games soon. And then, you know, from there, it's just kind of building back up to, you know, kind of building back up to that arm strength to get ready for real minor league games. And then the other big injury news with some Pirates prospects, Rinku Singh, the million-dollar arm pitcher, will miss.
Yeah, that's why I knew that name.
Yeah. He's the guy from that that movie with John Hamm. So he'll miss the entire 2015 season. This will be the third season in a row that he's missed. The last two were Tommy John surgery, and this one is a broken elbow.
So you mean that when you just find out, you can throw really hard. Sometimes that doesn't bode well for your body. Is that what this is
Yeah,
about?
You know. Turns out throwing is not a really natural motion. So it's
Rinku.
It's bad for everybody's arms, but looks like it was particularly bad for his. So kind of disappointed, but you know.
Poor Rinku.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even know where you go from there. You know, you're missing the last couple.
You go home.
I would assume that your career is done, but I don't know. So it'll be just worth watching just for the general intrigue of the issue, I suppose. So that's it with the dings and dents. It's been a fairly relaxed spring as far as injuries go. We had Corey Hart slicing his toe on a hot tub, and that's been about it.
That's good.
Yeah, right.
That's as bad as it gets.
Yeah, I can deal with that. So, moving into some general team news, though, the Pirates acquired first baseman Hunter Morris from the Milwaukee Brewers, for a player to be named later.
Morris, I don't know anything about Hunter Morris.
He was kind of a big deal. Like, I remember when he was, you know, he was drafted, and he was kind of like the Brewers' Matt LaPorta, if you will.
Matt LaPorta was with the Brewers.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. But he, you know, he's 26 years old. Last year, he spent most of the year in AAA Nashville. He slashed .279, .323, .448 with 11 home runs and 42 RBI in 91 games. You know, he was a fourth round draft pick in 2010, so he has some pedigree. He was the Southern League MVP in 2012. He hit 28 home runs that year, drove in 113. So, you know, Milwaukee's obviously gotten to the point with him where it was kind of time to make a move, and they decided their best move was to move him to another organization. So, I guess...
The old player to be named later.
Yeah, right, for the old PTBNL.
That guy gets traded so much.
Yeah, he's in a lot of transactions. So I don't know how I feel about the move. I haven't had a whole lot of time to take a look at it since the transaction occurred, as far as what, you know, Baseball America has to say about Hunter Morris anymore. But, you know, it seems like he has some kind of pedigree. So I don't know. In my mind, I guess I just immediately equated that to Andrew Lambeau. Like, oh, did we just get another Andrew Lambeau? Like, is that... I'm assuming that's kind of what that move must be, because that's how I would kind of feel about Andrew Lambeau if he were traded. Like, meh, you know, whatever. We got a player to be named later. All right. So I don't know. That might be worth me digging into a little bit more.
High praise for Andrew Lambeau here.
Right. Yeah.
Not that I'm complaining. I've been off, the Andrew Lambeau bandwagon since it got registered at the DMV. So
since it became a bandwagon.
Yeah.
So looking at the Pirates spring this year, it's been an interesting spring to watch. We have some transitions in Pittsburgh, not necessarily like big roster changes, but Pedro Alvarez slid from third base over to first base.
Yes. And you have it in the notes here, but I was listening to the Pirates game the other day, and I heard when he made the diving stop, and there was the Pirates announcers, and they were just like, Oh, they were all over gushing themselves.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, Pedro diving. Oh.
Well, and here's the thing about Pedro. At first, I don't think the glove is going to be a problem. Like, fielding the ball was never Pedro's problem. Of his, I think he had 25 errors last year. 23 of them were throwing errors. It wasn't a matter of Pedro can't field a ground ball all of a sudden.
Right.
I think where you're going to see Pedro struggle, if he does struggle this season, will be some of the nuances of first base that you don't really think about until you're suddenly thrust in the middle of having to play first base. But
right.
And you know the kind of stuff that's required for first base. It's not generally the most athletic position on the field, but it does take a lot of knowledge about doing a lot of little things correctly as far as footwork goes, and like pickoff throws are a big thing that you see a lot of guys struggle with if they're transitioning to first base. A pitcher launching a ball over 90 miles an hour at you from 40 feet away takes some adjusting. So
plus, just the again, like, he's good with the glove, so like digging throws out of the dirt shouldn't be an issue, but there's a certain footwork that goes with that. Otherwise, it's easy to get yourself so crossed up when the ball comes in, you just can't get to it, and where to, what place to cover and the cutoffs. And
right. And that's just generally on top of seeing the ball from a whole other side of the field. Which you hear about a lot from, specifically outfielders when they talk about shifting from one corner to another or from center field to a corner. The same thing's true in the infield. The ball looks a lot different coming at you when you're at first base than it does when you're at third base. But it's nice to see that he looks in the games that I've seen. They've had broadcast, I think, 5 games this spring. He looks more and more comfortable at first base, making diving stops and picking balls out of the dirt and things like that. So that's good to see, I suppose. Now, speaking of the opposite of things that look good this spring.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Would be Jung Ho Kong, Gong, who has not looked good at all this spring. And he started off the spring by hitting a home run in his first at bat, which I feel like set a very dangerous precedent for the rest of the spring.
Started off in style.
Because now everybody in Pittsburgh thinks that we have signed the next Babe Ruth to play shortstop. But
when in fact,
I tell you what, I haven't seen a lot of his at bats again because the Pirates haven't broadcast too many games this spring. I saw the home run, the first home run of the spring. I've seen a couple other at bats intermittently, and the last game against the Orioles, Chris Tillman made him look like a double-A baseball player. Chris Tillman is not a great major league pitcher. He's a good major league pitcher, and he made Gong look silly, just silly. And Gong has like a weird swing to begin with, so you're kind of paying attention to his swing even more intently than you might be for any other pitcher. He hardly lifts his front foot at all. I mean, he picks like his heel up and it's back down and that's it. And so when Tillman had him chasing pitches on the outer half of the plate, he threw a breaking ball that just snapped off the plate and Gong swung at it and probably missed it by a good 6 inches. It was really noticeable that he got crossed up. It sounds like Neil Huntington is still going with him as, a backup infielder on the club.
He's got four million reasons not to.
I don't know whether that inspires a whole lot of confidence in me, though, just watching his last couple of bats. And I think it does. It lends some perspective to, just how hard baseball is. Like we might bust Sean Rodriguez's balls because, all he does is hit for a little bit of power and that's about it. But he doesn't look like that. Sean Rodriguez does not look like that at the plate when he swings. At least when Sean Rodriguez is up there, it's, it looks like a good at bat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're like, he put up a good fight.
I mean, if Gong's being fooled that badly, it makes you wonder a little bit, at least, how quickly he's going to learn to adjust to major league pitching like that.
That's a bad sign. How much money did you spend on him?
Well, what was the post? I think it's $16 million. So it was a $5 million posting fee and then an $11 million contract. So, you know, he's going to, I would assume he's going to get better.
How old is he?
27, I think. 26, 27.
So maybe a little better.
Well, I mean, I think he's going to get better in the sense that he's going to adjust to the things that happen in Major League Baseball that maybe he didn't see in Korea. But I kind of wish, you know, and I talked about this on the podcast when we first signed Gong. I kind of wish he would have had a chance to do it in AAA Indianapolis.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
So I was kind of surprised that Neil Huntington was that staunch about, hey, he's our major league backup infielder, because now you've kind of painted yourself in a corner with your decisions with him. Something else that was worth really paying attention to this spring, though, was the fifth starter battle, which we talked about a few podcasts ago. It was narrowed down to Jeff Locke and Vance Worley. Well, it's been announced that Jeff Locke has won the fifth starter's role coming out of the gate over Vance Worley, which kind of surprised me.
I don't see the confetti coming down.
Yeah, it's not a ticker tape parade. And you know my feelings on Vance Worley. I think I made that opinion very clear at the end of last season. Somehow Ray Searage figured out how to juice that lemon just a little bit more, though.
Yep.
They got some of the best numbers out of Vance Worley that you'd ever seen last season. But I guess in my mind, I thought Vance Worley was going to come out of this battle with the job for that same reason, because they just wanted to ride that horse until it couldn't ride anymore. And, you know, they've decided to go with Locke. They said part of the reason they said they were going to go with Locke, I think it was Neil Huntington who stated he's been with the organization for a long time. So it made it seem like he almost, because he's an organizational guy, you know, I think they got him in that, the Nate McClouth trade, forever ago, but because he's been with the organization for so long, it sounded like they were kind of rewarding him because he's a Pirates guy. Which I thought was kind of interesting. You know, Locke can be excellent at times. He was an all-star a few years ago. First half of the season, had a great first half of the season. But when his control is not on, his starts are really, really bad. You know, he throws a sinker. Know. It's not a great pitch. It doesn't generate a whole lot of missed bats. You know, it's more a contact pitch. He has a pretty decent changeup. You know, the changeup is really his kind of his go-to pitch. You know, it's great for missing bats and it induces a lot of ground balls. But man, when his command is not on, and you saw that, I think it was 2013. You went and saw one of his last starts of the year, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And he
was brutal.
Just gets shellacked.
Absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
I know I've said it before, but he was like walking Bronson Arroyo and the fans were like, "Get the pitcher."
Yeah.
But he couldn't find it. You know what I mean? Like, if the strike zone was out there, he didn't know where it was. It was like a mystery to him at that point. It was like something he'd heard about.
Right. So here's my thing about it. I think a lot of it has to do with the way that the Pirates roster is constructed. You know, they already have Tony Watson and Antonio Bastardo in the bullpen. So they already have two lefties in the bullpen. So if they start with Jeff Locke in the bullpen, you're talking about three lefties in your bullpen. And then matchups get a little trickier at that point. So my guess is they're probably thinking, you know, we can put another righty in the bullpen with Vance Worley. When things start breaking down with Locke, or if things start breaking down with Locke, then, you know, we can switch roles. Because Clint Hurdle said, you know, to the media that he's talked to Vance Worley. He's let him know, hey, you're an important part of this team. And basically, like, we're going to need you for some starts this year. So they're kind of already planning on that. So that's kind of where we're at with the fifth starter at this point. I think there are teams that have worse things going on with their fifth starters. So, I mean, in that respect, I guess I feel okay about it. But I'm glad Pittsburgh signed AJ Burnett. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, really, right?
Yeah.
If not, you'd have the pleasure of both of them.
Right, yeah. So just some other spring stuff. Neil Walker's slated to be the Pirates' primary cleanup hitter this season, which the higher you're hitting Walker in the lineup, the better. I've been beating this drum forever. but, you know, Neil Walker does not need to be buried down in the sixth hole in the Pirates' lineup. So that's good to see. One of the things I wanted to touch on about Pittsburgh's 2015, and I think it's worth paying attention to, I think two of the biggest keys to Pittsburgh's success this year are going to be Gerrit Cole's progress on the mound and Gregory Polanco's progress at the plate. Gerrit Cole, you can see just by watching him, even if you're a casual baseball fan, he has the stuff to be amazing. You know, I think what's held Gerrit Cole back more than anything has been, you know, injuries that have kind of shortened his season, you know, his first couple years in the league. But, you know, he has a four-seam fastball that is filthy. You know, his four-seam fastball has, you know, a lot of run on it. And it induces a ton of ground balls relative to other pitchers' four-seam fastballs. You know, it's blazing. It's, you know, 100-mile-an-hour fastball with some run on it. You know, he throws a super hard curveball, which is, you know, a great ground ball pitch. You know, he has a slider, he has a changeup. I mean, he's got everything that you want with the start. I mean, I can wax poetic about Gerrit Cole and how amazing his stuff is.
Then what's the thing that's holding him back?
I think the thing that's holding him back is, you know, he's got to get to that. I don't think he's going to make it to 200 innings this year, just because if you look at the percentage increase from last season that it would take to get to that threshold, it's the way that teams manage pitchers, they don't do that anymore. Yeah. But I think if he can get to 180 innings, I think that's what Pittsburgh needs, because I think the progression will, you know, with Gerrit Cole is we're in the middle of it. You know, you're going to see if he can throw 180 innings, you know, you're going to see that 3.25 type ERA from him that you need from a frontline starter. That's going to mean he's going deeper into games. That's going to mean, you know, you're relying less on your bullpen in those starts. And hopefully that's going to mean that Pittsburgh is going to be winning a lot more games when he's on the mound.
All right.
As far as Polanco goes, I mean, I think it's important to remember that Gregory Polanco was 22 years old last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, he came out of the gates blazing, and then the league kind of adjusted to him. And, you know, he made some adjustments, and, you know, he had some things that he struggled with. But at 23 years old, I think Gregory Polanco and everybody seemed to kind of be down on him after that, you know, that struggle that he went through, you know, after that phenomenal start. But I think at 23 years old, he's ready to start progressing as a hitter as well. If he's a, how do I want to phrase this? If he's a positive offensive contributor for Pittsburgh this year, I think he's made enough strides forward as a hitter to help Pittsburgh continue to be competitive and, you know, play for that division. So that's what I think you need from Polanco. I think you need him. If you look at it, I think if at the end of the season he has an OPS plus over 100, that he's going to be a good offensive contributor for Pittsburgh in the capacity that they need him to be.
I can see that. Yeah.
And again, like, I think it's important to remember he's 23. So, you know,
what are you saying?
He's going to have some growing pains. That's what.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that's what all baseball is a player comes out, does what they do, the league adjusts, and then he needs to adjust to whatever the league adjusts to. And I think that's what you're going to have to see this year. You know, teams figured out how to get him out. They figured out how to get him to pop the ball up. They figured out how to get him to beat the ball on the ground, you know, to the right side where they had players positioned there to throw him out. And so now it's going to be up to him to start using more of the field, you know, driving the ball and figuring out ways to get on base so he can use his legs on the base paths. So the last thing I wanted to touch on was the Pittsburgh Pirates minor league stuff. You know, we don't have everybody's assignments yet, but we have a pretty good idea of where everybody's going to end up. You know, obviously stuff is subject to change. And, you know, we talked to Greg Coleman a couple weeks ago, and, you know, a lot of times you don't know who's coming to your minor league team until the bus unloads at your stadium. But it's looking like Pittsburgh's best minor league level is going to be High Bradenton, where we should have Austin Meadows and Reese McGuire, who are two of Pittsburgh's better prospects, along with Barrett Barnes, Harold Ramirez, my favorite, Jung Dae Jong, catcher, should be there. Wyatt Matheson, who was a catching prospect that the Pirates turned into a third baseman, should be in Bradenton. Shortstop Jacoby Jones from LSU, one of the Pirates' top draft picks a few years ago, should be there. Jose Ozuna, first baseman, should be there as well. So it's looking like Bradenton's going to have quite a bit of talent at their level this season. A little closer to Pittsburgh, in Double-A, Josh Bell should be returning to Altoona, I would think. And Tyler Glasnow is slated to start the season in Altoona, which is going to make Altoona a lot of fun to watch this season, which kind of excites me with the Seawolves, you know, facing the curve for a couple seasons at home every year. And then the top level at AAA Indy, Nick Kingham should be at AAA Indy this season with, I would assume Alan Hansen's going to be there. Your favorite player, Stetson Alley, should be there as well.
He's my boy.
Yeah. And shortstop Max Muroff should be around there.
Maybe I should just change it up and really embrace Stetson Alley this year.
You should. Yeah. Join the Stetson Alley. Join the Stetson Alley bandwagon.
I'll think about it.
Gift Ngope, one of the best defensive players in all of baseball. He should be floating around Indianapolis. Mel Rojas.
Best name.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome name. And Willie Garcia, I'm not really sure. I would think Willie Garcia would be at Indy, but, I mean, he could return to Altoona just as easily to work on his plate discipline. And the Pirates farm system is not, you know, where it was when you had Talion and Polanco and, you know, Garrett Cole. Right. It's not, you know, the best farm system in baseball, but it's still, by most measures, a top 10 farm system in baseball. So...
Well, you know, when you get better, you don't get as good picks.
Yes. Also, that is, that is very true.
So that's a reality you have to deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the difference between, like, getting Francisco Lindor and,
Yeah, I would say, too, Pittsburgh does some interesting things with their draft picks, like taking Tony Sanchez with the fourth overall pick. So
I mean, just having a good pick doesn't guarantee anything. You got to use it, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But generally I do. Yeah, I understand your sentiment with that. So
that's the thing, though. After you've been bad for so long, it's hard to adjust to that draft pick in the 20s.
Yeah, right. What do we do here? All these players are the same.
You're like, wait a minute now. All the good guys are gone. That's all the guys we scouted.
So that's it for the Pirates. What's going on with the Cleveland Indians as we start gearing up for opening day?
Well, I guess I'll start with my injuries. And really, the only one, thankfully, is Nick Swisher, who's still recovering from his double knee surgery last August. But he did make it out on the field yesterday, actually. And... the game wasn't televised, so all I saw when I checked the box score real quick while the game was going on was that he had an RBI single. So that's positive, at least. I mean, yeah. You know, that's something. He DH'd yesterday. I would guess that he'll probably have today off and then maybe play again tomorrow. And that's probably the end of the Cactus League.
Yeah, you guys still have games going on tomorrow.
I'm not sure. Now that I think about it, today's Friday. I don't know about that. You can check that if you want.
Yeah, I'll do that. The Pirates' last game was yesterday against the Orioles, their last game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, so Swisher maybe just got that one little cameo there. He's going to listen to this. This doesn't sound like a guy that just wants to go on a field trip. I don't know what does. He's going to go to Houston with the team for the opening series.
Okay.
He's not going to play. He's going to be on the DL, but he's going to go to Houston. And then he's going to go back to Arizona and play in some minor league games before getting like a minor league rehab assignment. I mean, doesn't it just sound like he wants to go to opening day?
There's that clubhouse presence that you brought with Nick Swisher when you brought him to Cleveland.
Oh, he's got a presence. I'll give you that. But I don't know. He's going to Houston. So when you watch that game and you see his mugs beaming out at you from the dugout, don't get too excited. He's on the disabled list. He is not eligible to play. He, in fact, has only played one game and has a lengthy road back, but he's getting better. So there's that.
Yeah, man. Hey, you guys have games going on until tomorrow.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, you're two games against the Brewers before your home opener. So you guys have one day off.
Yeah.
You guys just packing them all in this spring.
That's right, man. I would guess that Swisher won't play today, and then that maybe he'll play tomorrow at DH again. The only other real injury update, I guess, is Jason Kipnis, who has, you know, had a long offseason where he was thinking about how poorly he performed last year, and then I guess he was distracted thinking about that and caught his finger on a weight rack and had to have surgery on his finger. Then he came to camp. That was getting better. Then he hurt his back, and he missed like a week. Well, he's been playing pretty much every day. He's been hitting. He's been running. He's been diving and popping up and doing all the things that, you know, you cringe about the first time after a back injury. So he looks good. So hopefully all this nonsense is behind Jason Kipnis and he can go into this season healthy. I will say that in the times I have seen him, both before and after the back injury, he's been driving the ball to the opposite field, which is a great sign for Jason Kipnis.
Yeah.
So hopefully Kip is ready to bounce back and be healthy. It's one of those things, if he struggles again, it's not like there's no one to replace him. Obviously, Jose Ramirez can easily play second, and Francisco Lindor can be called up to play shortstop. It's more like, what do we do with Jason Kipnis? We have him signed through 2019. Where do we play him? You know, that's really the problem. It's not like, oh, we have no one to play second base. We got lots of people play second base. It's what do we do with Jason Kipnis now? So hopefully that problem just goes away because Kip has a great year. And I mean, he's the kind of guy that could make or break our season in a lot of ways, because a good year from Kipnis is 2020, you know,
right?
A dynamic middle infielder, at least at the plate, who can steal bags and hit for power. A bad season is last year, you know, 6 home runs and a .240 average, and he's either ineffective or injured. And right.
I mean, if you look at that 2013 season, I mean, Jason Kipnis put up MVP caliber numbers in 2013.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that those numbers were a 284, 366, 452 triple slash.
Yeah.
With 17 home runs and 30 stolen bases. That's.
Yeah. All through the minors, I can't speak to his time at ASU, but all through the minors, Kipnis would go on stretches where he would literally carry his team for, you know, just get so hot that it was like Jason Kipnis buzzsaw. And he had stretches like that in 2013. I remember them. He was named Player of the Month, I think, in June that year. And he just had a phenomenal month. But we also know the other side, which is the injuries, the ineffectiveness. And And hopefully it was just that that sapped his power and everything last year and not an underlying problem. So
right.
He seems to be healthy, so we'll go with that and we'll be optimistic because it's still spring training, so we can still be optimistic. two more days of optimism. And then I guess we should say Michael Bourne has looked amazing this spring. I mean, he's just like screaming around the base paths in the outfield. He hasn't stolen any bases. There's kind of this belief that he's doing it on purpose because he doesn't want to beat up his legs any more than he needs to.
Right.
Because he is an old man. And I mean, when you used to steal 50 bases a season, it's not like you need to learn how to do it, you know?
Right.
You just need to be fast enough, have the reflexes and the explosive, power in your lower body to do it. So hopefully we see Borny start stealing bases when the season starts, but he looks really good right now.
Yeah.
He went, spent the winter, working with, track coach to, strengthen his lower body, strengthen his legs, his hamstrings. And like we were talking, there's times when we watch it and we just cringe because like he hits a ground ball and he just screams down the baseline. You're like, oh no, oh no. But he seems to be bouncing back from all those. He is covering a good bit of ground in the outfield and his bat speed looks really good. I saw him just turn on an inside pitch the other day for a double. And it was like, man, that's the Michael Bourne I remember, you know, with Philadelphia, with the Braves. That would be so nice at the top of the lineup.
Yeah.
And it's like you said in your predictions piece, you know, Michael Bourne's the kind of guy that should experience some positive regression.
Right.
Like, he's been so bad, like, there has to be a little bit of a correction in a good direction.
We should also say this is a bit of a spoiler alert because we haven't released our prediction piece just yet.
Oh, sorry.
But it will be coming, Jason.
I didn't say where you were talking about.
Right, yeah. It will be coming soon though.
Yeah, it's coming.
Which while we're on the topic, our predictions are, I feel like they're pretty good. Our prediction piece is definitely, it's worth looking at as far as giving you a good idea of what to pay attention to going around the league.
Well, what you said, Chris got the Indians record on the nose.
Yeah. You were off by 2 games for the Indians and Pirates last year.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't always go on the beaten path either.
Yeah, we like to give you some stuff to think about. We don't like to pick the obvious choice every year.
Yeah.
For everything.
Here's a tease. I did not pick Chris Bryant as NL Rookie of the Year.
Say what?
Yeah. It's a tease, so I'm just gonna leave it at that.
Yeah, you're gonna have to go see the article when it comes out, probably Saturday. So
there you go. But anyway, so hopefully Michael Bourne's healthy and hopefully Kip's healthy and Swisher seems to be getting better. So, you know, like you said, things, it's a injury wise, it was a positive camp, I'd say. Everybody that got hurt seemed to bounce back quickly. And those guys coming back seem to, for the most part, come back really strong. Guys like Brandon Moss and Michael Bourne and Ryan Rayburn, his knee seems to be fine. So we're just waiting on Swish. And that seems like a good place to transition to the roster. Because I still don't know when Nick Swisher comes back, how he fits on this team. There's so many outfielders. Oh, and they are saying Nick Swisher is not going to play first base. It's actually too hard on his knee. He's going to play the outfield and DH.
Which is funny because the outfield was too hard on his shoulder.
Right. I mean, I can see that first base would be hard on your knee. It's a lot more sudden movement, you know. But it's going to be harder on your shoulder in the outfield, that's for sure.
Right.
You don't have to just underhand toss the ball back to the pitcher.
Yeah.
But so anyways, we'll see how that goes. Regardless, they have decided that it appears they've decided that David Murphy and Ryan Rayburn are going to make this team. They're not going to trade Murphy, which was my prediction going into the year. So that means you're going to have four left-handed outfielders with Brantley, Bourne, Moss, and Murphy, and then Ryan Rayburn. Excuse me. And then Mike Avilas. But they decided they're not going to keep Tyler Holt, which I was very disappointed in because that was the guy that I thought, you know, kind of completed this team better. They are deciding. It hasn't been decided as far as I know, unless you know differently. They're still deciding on the 25th spot between Austin Adams, the reliever, for an eighth bullpen arm, or Jesus Aguilar, first baseman, slugger, or Michael Martinez, utility infielder.
Now, I know it's not Aguilar because he was just...
he was demoted.
Yep, okay. he was assigned.
So it's either Michael Martinez... Let me check my Twitter if Michael Martinez has been demoted because you might not have seen that one. It's not exactly headline news. Michael Martinez, he used to play for the... Pirates.
Yeah, he played for the Pirates.
The old Pirates farmhand.
Just kind of, you know, plugged him in here and there. I wouldn't say he was not a major contributor.
No. I do see on my Twitter from MLB Trade Rumors, Tigers nearing trade for relief pitcher.
Oh, I wonder so which one.
I don't know, but I'm sure it'll be an improvement.
Every time Joe Nathan sees one of those things, he's got to start sweating bullets.
Yeah. I don't see anything about Michael Martinez, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But regardless, they're either going to go with Austin Adams or Michael Martinez. And here's the thing, if you go with Austin Adams, okay, let's just think about this for a moment. They chose Zach McAllister for the fifth starter job, which we'll talk about in a minute. But they've also said, like, well, we don't really need a fifth starter other than that first week of the season. We don't need, like, April 21st. So Zach will probably get some work out of the bullpen while we skip him in the rotation. So that essentially means if you go with an eighth bullpen arm from, like, April 9th or something until April 21st, you're going to have nine relievers.
Which Terry Francona, he's got to love that.
And he's just like smiling on his scooter all the way back to his hotel room thinking about it.
That's just a little slice of heaven for him.
Yeah. Nine relievers. Well, I could put this guy in and then we could pitch one batter and just, then pull this guy for one batter and then.
Imagine what I could do.
Okay, last spot goes to Austin Adams.
Okay.
Paul Hoynes has got it. Unless there's a trade or waiver deal.
I mean, I understand why it didn't go to Jesus Aguilar, but can we talk about how awesome Jesus Aguilar is? I just, you know, I know we're probably, our perception of Jesus Aguilar is probably polluted because we've seen him hit a ball outside of a stadium, but, you know, he's so fun to watch. When he swings, man, it's like watching Paul Bunyan swing.
And he looks so much better this summer.
Oh, dude, he had a great spring. He hit like 400 this spring.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I understand why you send him down, you know, why you have to demote him to minor league camp. Well, but
I think it's a question of how much is he going to play, you know?
Right, you need him to get every day at bats. That's the thing.
Yeah, and so that's why a guy like Michael Martinez actually becomes a possibility, because frankly you don't really care if Michael Martinez gets regular at bats.
Right, yeah.
He's the kind of guy that you put at the end of the bench, and when you need him you use him, and if it becomes necessary to cut him, you cut him because there's somebody else, frankly, similar to him that's available probably.
Right.
But looks like they're going with Austin Adams, so we got a 9-man bullpen here to start the year, so Terry Francona didn't sleep much last night dreaming about it. And they, like we said, they sent Danny Salazar back to AAA. Let me quote you Danny Salazar's spring numbers so you can understand He was 1-2 with an 8.18 ERA over 11 innings. He did strike out 15 in that time and walked only 5, but obviously he was just getting tattooed. The biggest problem was on the 26th, he faced the Reds, and that was like when they were saying, you know, okay, Danny, like, that's when the Mickey Callaway went into the locker room and told everyone, like, you got to start pitching like it's the regular season now. And, you know, stop working on stuff and start, like, trying to win ball games here. And Danny Salazar went out and in 3 1/3 innings proceeded to give up 6 earned runs and 2 homers. And that was just kind of like the exclamation point on the end of a rough spring. Compare that to Zach McAllister, who over 25 1/3 innings struck out 28 and has a 2.84 ERA. And it's pretty obvious that Danny Salazar needed to go back to the minors. keep in mind, McAllister was out of options, as you know, so he was going to make the team either as a bullpen arm or as a starter. He's been throwing 97 this spring, and you know, McAllister, remember in 2013 when he was really tuning it up before he hurt his finger too?
Right, yeah.
Like in 2013, he was 9-9 with a 3.75 ERA, struck out 101 batters in 134 innings. So, you know, McAllister, when he gets it turned on, he can be a really effective guy, especially, I mean, we're talking about a fourth or fifth starter here. You know, we're not saying Zach McAllister is like a number two guy in a rotation, but you got a guy with a ERA around mid threes or at least under fours as the fifth starter. That's a pretty good rotation. So it's going to be interesting to watch McAllister and TJ House at the back of that rotation. TJ House is like a big sleeper. Like, lots of people are really high on TJ House.
Yeah, I like TJ House. I like command guys.
Yeah, I like TJ House too. I mean, it's the whole rotation. I like the whole rotation. I think Bauer had a good spring. Carrasco had a good spring. That is one thing to keep in mind, and I don't know the update on it, but a few days ago, Carrasco was home with his wife who was expecting a child. So that could factor into that first week where they need 5 guys. They might have to dip down and get a guy like a Josh Tomlin or someone to make one of those starts, but he's going to go right back down.
So I hear there's some news with who's going to potentially be receiving some pitches from these guys.
Oh, yeah. So everybody knows and loves Yan Gomes, of course. And he's had a really good spring and looked like the good Yan Gomes. But the Indians have been really impressed both last fall and this spring with Roberto Perez. And Perez, all through the minors, he profiled as like a defense first catcher. And the question was always, will he ever hit enough that we can stomach using him as a backup catcher? And last year he came up and had a really good year. And he had a good year in the minors last year before being called up. 2 years ago, he had a pretty rough season at AAA, but it was revealed after the fact that he had suffered Bell's palsy and that was part of his problem. He was having trouble with his eyesight. And those problems certainly seemed to be corrected last year. And he's had a really good spring. Like I said, he's a very good receiver, but he's looked good with the bat. And so, as we know, this Indians team is really left-handed heavy. You know, like we talked about, that's why I wanted Tyler Holt instead of this parade of left-handed outfielders. So they're actually happy enough with Roberto Perez that they're kicking around this idea of when a left-hander starts against the Indians to let Yan Gomes DH, because obviously Gomes is right-handed, so you'd want Gomes to stay in, but you let Gomes DH, take a day off from catching, and you let Roberto Perez catch, you know, because his bat seems legit enough to at least experiment with that. So that's kind of the plan to start the season, is that Roberto Perez might see a little bit more time catching than you think, not at the expense of Yan Gomes' playing time, but just more time catching than we would think.
Yeah, just giving Gomes a break.
Yeah, because Gomes, too, he's one of those guys, you know, 20-homer guy. You want to keep him in the lineup as much as you can, especially in this team with the fact that he's right-handed. You know, he's the guy that looks really nice in the five-hole, or the six-hole, rather, when it goes Santana 4, Moss 5, and Gomes 6. He gives both of those fellas a lot of protection in that spot. So you want to keep old Gomer as happy as possible. Keep those knees from barking.
So there was one thing I wanted to touch on with the Cleveland Indians, and I think it's worth bringing up and discussing, which is that they have 5 weeknight games in April and May this season that have been designated a 6:10 start. So they're starting games basically an hour early relative to the usual start time. They have the 27th, 28th, 29th against Kansas City. All those start at 6:10. 27th, 28th, 29th of April, I should clarify. Will all be 6:10 starts against Kansas City. And then May 12th and May 13th, against St. Louis will be 6:10 start times as well. I think it's important to bring that up because I feel like Cleveland is one of the most fan-friendly stadiums that I've ever been to. You can go take a look online at their promotional schedule, and you can see they still have dollar hot dog nights at the stadium. Like, yeah, I've never seen another major league team do that. Oh, yeah, it's like, I mean, May 8th, May 22nd, May 26th.
It's pretty much like every Friday they're home, right?
Yeah, June 5th. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You know, they have, like, they're not just Fridays. You know, Tuesday the 23rd of June is a dollar dog night. But, I mean, so, you know, they're trying to start games early for the fans that are in Cleveland that have to leave maybe right after work, that can't make it back into the city. You know, they have dollar dog nights. They have great giveaways, you know, replica jerseys and bobblehead nights, and you know, they have they have $3 drafts on certain nights,
and they have the new renovations, which are getting like a lot of praise, and not just in Cleveland, I mean like nationally,
right?
People are raving about the renovations to the stadium.
And I guess as a fan of baseball, I'm kind of disappointed that Cleveland always finishes so close to the bottom of the league in attendance every year, considering all of the things that they do for their fans. I don't know. I think it's a very well-run organization, the Indians are, and I think there's a lot of benefits to going to the stadium. And every time I go, I always have a great time, especially when I can get a hot dog for a dollar.
Well, and I don't... And you know, there's going to be probably someone who hears this and it says, well, people don't support them because they stink. But that's actually, you know, a bunch of BS, to be honest. I mean, I think since 2001, I want to say they made the playoffs 8 times and they've won the division like 3 or 4 times. There's a lot of teams that don't even come close to that level of success.
Right.
And sell exponentially more tickets. You know, this team is, for the last, I mean, ever since Terry Francona's been there, they've been a really exciting team. Let's just start there. Right. And their attendance still has been awful. So you can't blame it on the fact that they're not competitive, because they are competitive. And you can't blame it on not being fan friendly, because you know, you just detailed all the things they do for the fans. So I don't know what the problem is, but it is disappointing.
So I guess what I'm saying is, fans, get out to the stadium, support the Indians this year.
There you go.
So that was all I wanted to talk about with the Indians. I thought that was really important to bring up. Anything else that we need to touch on that we haven't talked about with Cleveland?
I don't think so. Monday, April 6th, 7:10 p.m.
Getting started.
Indians open against the Astros in Houston.
Getting started. Oh, I love this time of year.
And I'm just gonna say, I'm just gonna throw this out there. If you can, like, if you play in like a daily fantasy league, like where you draft players each day, you might want to think about taking Corey Kluber against the whiff prone Astros on that day.
There could be a lot of strikeouts, yes.
So that could be fun to watch too.
Yeah, absolutely. The Klubot. Let's
zeroing in lately.
Let's wrap up with a Seawolves shout out really quick and talk about some of the things that the Erie Seawolves have going on. One of the most prominent would be that Mandalay Bay Properties no longer owns the Erie Seawolves. They are now owned by Fernando Aguiar, who is the Seawolves' new owner. He is the former Chiquita CEO from 2004 to 2012, and I guess he was most prominently featured on an episode of Undercover Boss at one point.
All right.
I don't know. I don't watch the show, but I might go look at a YouTube clip and see what he's all about. I hope it reflects nicely on him, I guess. He had a press conference the other day. It was kind of cool to hear him talk, and he seems really excited. You know, he stated one of the things that he wants to make sure happens is that the Seawolves remain in Erie. He said he liked everything about Erie other than the snow, basically. So.
Generally, I'm going to tell you real quick, generally the premise of Undercover Boss makes the boss look good by the end.
Yeah.
What happens is, like, the guy at the Chiquita plant, right, like, he doesn't really know what the CEO looks like. So the CEO dresses up like he's just a Chiquita line worker.
Yeah, does he put on, like, a fake mustache or something?
Maybe, I don't know. But then what happens is, usually, he gets to know these people, and he starts to, quote-unquote, understand their plight.
Okay.
And by the end of it, he has either, changed something that, was kind of a top-down order that he didn't see the effects of, or he has, learned someone's life story and, like, gives them a scholarship to college or something.
Okay.
It's kind of like, I mean, I could be wrong, but the way I understand that program is it doesn't ever reflect poorly on the company owner.
It's somewhat formulaic, you may say.
Yes.
It's kind of like Bar Rescue, where that guy goes in, yells at everybody, changes some things, and then they have a great opening night, and everything's better by the end.
Yeah.
Kinda. I gotcha. That kind of reality TV. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm still going to YouTube clip it just to see.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, so that's good. I mean, staying in Erie, that's really what we want to know,
Yeah, and he's in his press conference, he also stated that they're setting up a fund for local Erie residents that he would like to start putting money towards different community efforts. He didn't really expand on it, but, he wants to put some money back into the community as well. He said, the fans are the most important investment when it comes to minor league baseball, so... seemed to say all the right things, and he seemed like a very personable and a pretty cool dude. And it'll be kind of neat to see your team's owner just floating around the stadium. I think that'll be an interesting touch as well. So the Seawolves open their season Thursday, April 9th. It's a 4-game series against Trenton, and then they have a 3-game series against Binghamton before they head on the road. So I'll definitely be at the home opener on the 9th. I'm hoping it's a little warm than the home opener last year.
Get too excited about that prospect.
I will be there dancing with Seawolf on the dugout, God willing. So, some other important news, the Seawolves and Smith's, hot dogs came to an agreement, which if you're from Erie, Pennsylvania, you understand the importance of this because Smith's hot dogs are like no other hot dog that you will ever eat. So, Smith's will remain the official hot dog of the Erie Seawolves through 2017. I feel like I don't know what it would take for a local hot dog company to not be the official hot dog of a baseball team. I feel like you would have to have a really strained relationship between the two parties for that not to happen.
Yeah.
So, it's good. Again, local business. And if you seriously, in all sincerity, if you haven't tried a Smith's hot dog, do it. Smith's hot dogs they're phenomenal. So
maybe we should get sponsored by Smith's Hot Dogs.
Yeah, maybe I'll ask if they want to sponsor a small mom and pop podcast.
All you would require is a 6-pack of hot dogs.
Yeah, just give me some free hot dogs. I'll throw your name on the title of this thing.
Yeah.
So, and then the other really cool thing I want to bring up today, the Seawolves had an Easter keg hunt at Joliet Park this morning.
How does that work?
You go through the ballpark and you look for a keg. Go check it out on Twitter. They have a picture of a guy holding up a keg that he found in the stadium.
Like mini kegs or full?
Yeah,
keg?
like quarter kegs, just lying around the stadium. So an Easter keg hunt for your more grown up fans.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a guy just triumphantly holding a keg over his head.
He's like, I got it.
I found it.
It's probably full of like Bud Light.
I wish they, probably from last year, the Bud Light they didn't finish. I wish they would have painted them though, like Easter eggs.
Oh yeah, you should bring that up to Greg Coleman.
Yeah, maybe I will. Maybe I will next time I see him. Let's paint the Easter kegs next year. So that's it for the Seawolves as well. So April 9th, the Seawolves are getting their season underway. So a lot of talent coming through again. AA baseball, you're getting to see some premier talent. So get out to Joliet Park whenever you can and have a howl of a good time.
There you go. You said it.
That's it. I like to work that in whenever I can. So I think that's it for the podcast today, Jason. We got it. Anything else that we want to bring up? We forget anything?
I'm just going to throw this out there that I think that former Erie Seawolf James McCann is going to take the starting catching job from Alex Avila.
Oh my God.
By the beginning of May.
We had a chance to see quite a bit of James McCann over the last couple of years, and he's got a good line drive swing. He hits the ball hard when he makes contact.
Yeah.
And apparently he's, by a lot of minor league scouts, also a very good receiving catcher. So,
all of those things would be above what Alex Avila can provide.
Yeah. Yeah. So, James McCann might be someone to keep your eye on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today. So, we'd like to thank our listeners and ask again, if you're listening to us on iTunes, that you give us a rate and review. We'll be podcasting a little more frequently now that the season's getting ready to get underway. So keep your ear to the ground for our next podcast. In the meantime, if you want to check us out on the web, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Oh.